Here I am. I mean, everything is just everywhere you look. There are jokes. Everywhere the jokes to be filed, jokes to be written, jokes that I thought of something. I mean, my life is just jokes.
Okay, that's a clip from Joan Rivers, A Piece of Work, the new documentary about Joan Rivers, her career, and a year in her life. I recently had the opportunity to sit down with directors Ricky Stern and Annie Sundberg to discuss the making of the film, their careers, and, of course, Joan Rivers. So I thought I'd share that with you, and here you go. Have a listen.
All right, so I'm here with Ricky Stern and Anne Sundberg. So that's all correct pronunciation, yeah. Everything.
Annie.
But sorry.
That's okay.
Okay, and you are the co-directors of Joan Rivers, A Piece of Work.
Actually, director.
Director.
Co-director.
Co-director.
Yes.
One director, co-director. Got it. Okay.
So we're going to make this really hard for you.
Yeah, this is as difficult as possible, I guess.
And how do I spell my name? With an I.
So I guess I don't know if you guys get this a lot, but the previous films that you've worked on, is this like number one question?
Number two, maybe.
I mean, your previous films are extremely weighty material, and you go from Darfur and politics and the
criminal justice system
to Joan Rivers. How did you guys pick that jump?
I wish we had a really good answer to this. We were sitting around our office, and we had finished The Devil Came on Horseback, and we were working on some smaller projects. And I do know Joan. Like, I'd met her twice through my parents, and I said, what about a film about Joan Rivers? It was just very spontaneous. And we were like, yeah, that could be interesting. And, like, called her, had a brief conversation, and then met with her, like, the next week at her apartment for about an hour. And I really was in that meeting where she was very honest and really open, and she was just turning 75, and it was the first time in a long time she had really admitted her age, and she just felt like it was going to be a really good year. And she, you know, I could see this passion in this woman who was fighting really to stay relevant in her profession so that she could do the things she loves to do. And I think that there's a universal story in that. So we sort of just jumped on it, but Annie can tell you how in some ways that's how we sort of jump on any story.
Yeah, I mean, it's like anytime you hear a good story, you're a writer, you're a journalist. I remember when we were first talking, when the Brian Steidel Devil Come on Horseback story came to us, you know, we were sitting there talking with his sister about the thing that she wanted to do about her work, talk about, you know, her work with women social entrepreneurs in Rwanda. But then she was telling this, you know, and then my brother was in the African Union, and he has all these photographs, and immediately you're like, oh my God, you know, he has photographs of what's going on. So it's those things that just spark an interest. We want to make films that are interesting and that are about people who are in circumstances that are somehow remarkable. You spend a lot of time on documentaries, so they might as well be really interesting to work on.
Sure.
So, I mean, for us, it's more about just finding an interesting character,
mm-hmm,
who is in an interesting point in their life. So there's challenges and there's obstacles. And it's very much like a narrative fiction film. You know, what is the journey for this person over the next year or the next period of time? We like to do verite films if we can, you know, and sort of try to figure out what are their stakes and what are their obstacles and how can we film that.
Mm-hmm. And approaching the material, did you approach it like you approach all of your films? Was it more of a challenge to deal with sort of the celebrity of Joan Rivers compared to what else you've worked on?
In some ways it was easier, and in some ways it was more difficult. The easier aspect was that it was really going to be a finite time. It was going to be a year. It was sort of a little, you know, and there was a goal initially that she was going to launch her play in London and then with that success there, take it to New York, and that would be nice sort of bookend closure, and the movie will be about her launching a play about her life, so you'll weave in a story of her life. That was like the initial setup.
Mm-hmm.
And when that changed, you know, it was just, okay, you know, at the same time we were filming sort of what was going on in her life, I was also going through all her archival material and figuring out, you know, learning much more about her history and reading her books and really understanding who she is and why she does the things she does, which I could see scenes in her present day life playing themselves out as ways of exemplifying, you know, who Joan is. So it was working between the material as it was unfolding and then this wealth of material and trying to weave in as much as we could that would sort of help people understand where this woman has come from. Because I think
it was different in that respect than our other films because there were themes, you know, and Ricky sort of really was thinking hard about what the themes of the film would be, because in other films it's a much more straightforward trajectory. Like, you know, The Trials of Daryl Hunt, it was unfolding, you know, a criminal justice story through, you know, the progressive legal cases that, you know, took over 19 years. Devil Came on Horseback was, again, at least there was a narrative arc that threw this person into, I mean, we had sort of the same... There was this idea of an unfolding year, and yet it was really the quest to find the themes about Joan, I think, that made this film different than the others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also making it a universal story so that you're not, you don't feel so much distance from this woman who's a celebrity of sorts, you know, that you could relate as just, you know, you want to be empathetic and understand your main character as a protagonist. And so I think it was really just trying to, like, figure out what motivates her. That would motivate any of us. And
I will say, too, the beauty of having someone who is comfortable being on camera and who understands cameras, though, is that they're much more willing to alert you to possible filming opportunities because they sort of have that sensibility of, like, oh, this would be good. You've got to film this thing.
Yeah.
Did you become close with her, and was that helpful? Mm-hmm. Or was it almost like she would maybe shut you down as a friend and say, oh, you don't need this, in terms of noticing camera opportunities?
I mean, I definitely think the way we made this movie was by getting close to her and being a very small crew. She really bonded with these two 30-year-old Charles and Seth who filmed, you know, camera and sound all the time. We just had a consistent crew. You know, because we're in New York and she's in New York, we could just show up for 2 hours, take the N train, you're right there, you know, film her and go back to her office. And I think it was that, just being in her life all the time, without much fanfare, you know, barely setting up lights, just shooting very quickly and not really being in her way, that made it feel easy for her.
And I think, too, that closeness, every film that we've ever made, we have relationships with our subjects, and they often last far past the end of the shooting, and we're still quite close, in particular with Mark Rabel and Daryl Hunt, and, you know, we stay in touch with Brian. I think that closeness, it allows, I mean, what was also really nice was that you also had other people who were tied in. I mean, I think Jocelyn was really good about sort of staying in touch as well, and it was, you sort of almost have to have that with a documentary, because otherwise it's just too hard to chase a person, you know?
Sure. At what point did you sort of decide on the themes and the narrative that you now have? Because, you know, you're even just describing now that you figured it would be about the play and then the play would end and that would be the movie, but so much must happen in a year.
Yeah. I mean, I think the themes somewhat unfold, but I have to say, like, I wrote a one-pager about this movie 2-3 years ago when we went into it. That's the one pager that we still use. I mean, it was fairly obvious from the beginning, I think. This is a woman who has dedicated her life to her profession, who is passionate about her work, and she is working, striving, struggling to remain vital and relevant in this business so that she can do the things she loves. I mean, that's kind of it. Now, so as an aging woman, there are themes. As a mother and personal relationships, there are themes. But I think it was pretty clear from the beginning, like, what the story was. It was just which scenes will play out and help resonate, you know, will resonate to sort of add the layering to the story as it goes. Because, you know, just winning Celebrity Apprentice, it's like, listen, you know, I don't need to make a movie about a TV show, right? So you have to really limit what all this contemporary stuff she's doing, you know, and just put in what's relevant to the bigger picture. It doesn't matter if she does a sitcom now or doesn't, in my mind. It matters to her, but that's not what the movie is about.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's very interesting, especially since we're watching a movie partially about the making of that television show, how that shows up, and now watching this movie in release and what it seems to be doing for her career.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you had an obligation to her career? Were you hoping to be this sort of, like, flashpoint for her as the movie's about her moving forward?
Not at all. I mean, I mean,
no.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, quite honestly, like, no one wanted to fund this movie. Mm-hmm. You know, they were either like, oh, I love Joan, but she's not my right demographic. You know, programmers were...
Or they're like, I really don't like Joan.
Or they didn't know. They don't know. You know, they didn't like her. And I'm like, well, that's because you don't know her. Right. Like, wait till you see the movie. I mean, I have to say, it was not an easy film in that regard. No one gave us grant money. No mm-hmm. one pre-bought it. Mm-hmm. And it was a little bit like, well, then fuck you. I'm going to make this fuck. I mean, I have to say there was a little bit of anger on my part, too. Okay, fine. You think that you don't fucking like her? Then wait, we'll prove you wrong. You know? I mean, it was a little bit of a struggle in that yeah. regard. And still a little bitter about it. But good for all of us yeah. that, you know, people have responded and like it. And but you never know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, and I was just thinking, too, about sort of where, in terms of what this film is doing, I think it's remarkable to see how different people are connecting with the film. And, you know, we were just talking about this with someone else, where I think the biggest hope that we have is that it's the people, like, you know, we had a screening and a 23-year-old, like, you know, post-college straight guy is like, oh, my God, I came because, you know, you helped mentor me through this other film program, and I never would have come. I never liked Joan Rivers. I love Joan Rivers now. And other people who have also come to have a totally different appreciation for her. It's just, it's a surprising film that way, I think. And hopefully that's what the best films do, is they bring a different perspective to, you know, something that you think you know. So.
Sure. The film, like you mentioned before, it is a verite style. You do have some talking heads and archival footage. Was it tough to strike a balance? Did you not want to do too much of the Joan Rivers biography? Because we don't get the Joan grew up in, you
right,
know,
whatever. Right. Well, you know, there was a in sort of going through her archive of stuff, I was somewhat dismayed, but I sort of knew it existed. There was a Lifetime and an A&E special, and then there was a British thing. So there was these things out there that were to Joan grew up,
yeah.
poor child in Brooklyn and whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean. It definitely was hard to strike the balance, and in fact we cut out a little bit of her mom and dad, and there was just this little moment, and don't ever remember, you know, we rushed to finish this for Sundance and like finally like watched it, and I was like, why did we lose that part about her mom and dad, like, and because I was fairly obsessed with that, you know, and all her books start with like, I was like my mom and my father, you know, and I just, it was one of those things where you're like, you get so comfortable with your material that you're like, eh, everybody knows that. And you know, sometimes you lose sight of, you know, God, I need to say that because no people don't know that. So unfortunately, there was a little bit of sort of overcutting in some of the archive stuff.
I know, that was the one, that's the only, that's, that also pains me too, because it was such a great scene. And I think that the stuff that Ricky, you know, like the stuff that really you uncovered, especially the little show with the scenes of Edgar and Joan, I mean, that stuff is just, it has such a life to it. You know, just the idea of, it was a verite scene cut as part of another package. It's just a different, one thing that was often broached was the commentary, like having other people comment on Joan or talk about Joan's place in the comedy world, but that's not what this film is either.
Yeah, I mean, people were like, why didn't you ask Sarah Silverman what they think of Joan?
Yeah.
And I was like, because I don't really care. I mean, no,
yeah.
honestly, like,
yeah.
you know, you just, you want it to be what you care, what you get out of her, not what
mm-hmm.
Sarah Silverman gets out of her.
Sure. But Kathy Griffin, I guess.
Well, Kathy Griffin was really organic because
mm-hmm.
she has a relationship with Kathy, and there are scenes where she's with. And same thing with John Rickles. Had she done a show with Sarah Silverman or someone else,
right?
I definitely would, and Tina Fey, you know, whatever, I definitely would have asked. We would have done this kind of like follow-up about, you know, your relationship. But I think in a verite film, you can't have both. You know, you can't, or if you do, it takes on this kind of tone where I'm telling you what you should, you know, there was a film that shall remain nameless,
yeah.
that was all about this comedian and how great he is. And it was like, you know, I can see it. Why are you telling me that?
Right.
So.
Or let me have my own independent experience of that person. It's a much
yeah.
more interesting experience than as a film goer.
I mean, anytime you go like, I know that, don't put it in your movie, you know,
yeah.
right?
Right. All right, so I guess
aren't you going to ask us the Jewish question from Hebe magazine?
The Jewish question? Which
I don't know.
One?
There's always
that always seems to come up organically, usually by mentioning that I write for Hebe.
I know.
Yeah.
So
but
I could do that right now. I could say I write for
Hebe.
Well,
one
magazine.
Of my favorite scenes
well.
In the film is Once a Jew, Always a Jew, where she goes to clean the bathroom at the Kennedy
Life
Center.
Well, it's funny, when I was sort of showing Joan the cuts, the final cut, rough cut. You know, she had her notes, she had all these notes, blah, 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 and, like, you know, most of them I didn't pay attention to. But there was this thing, she was like, I think it's too Jewish, like, right before she goes to Kennedy Center, she does the joke about the bun, German...
funniest woman not in the ovens.
Yes. And then she goes in and she's like, when's Jew? She's like, I think too much Jew. And she was sensitive to... She doesn't, you know, for a non-Jewish person, she doesn't want it. She wouldn't want. It's like it's okay in a room of Jews to have that joke, you know. But like sometimes there's a sensitivity.
It's almost
in that
too
moment.
Exclusionary,
yeah. In a sense, yeah. Or I think she just feels like, you know, she doesn't. I don't know. It's like a joke you can say to another. You're like, once a Jew, always a Jew. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
And so I think there was like, I was like, come on, it's funny. I have to leave the toilet scene in.
Yeah.
The toilet scene is great.
I love that scene. And that's the moment, like, you know, like when I first was watching that down, I was like, I just love the sound and the moment where she like, and that totally could have been trimmed. It was an unnecessary little moment where she's like in the back, you know what I mean? And those are the things that you do lose when you're making film, because you're like, they're not like necessary, but they sort of give you little touches of character. And certainly we trim so much to get this down to 80. I mean, there were moments like that that you just wish, you know, could breathe with them. Yeah.
It's weird that she would worry about all the Jewish jokes, considering how often they come out of her mouth.
I think it's just when you look at it in retrospect, like you sit back, and it's fine when it's in your little circle or if it's in your comedy act. But when you're putting it out to the world, you want. I think she's protective of not. I mean, you can say something that's anti-Semitic and not mean it if you're with your friend, you know. But if it's another person, could interpret it as this, you know, sort of a stereotypical thing. I think there's a sensitivity. I think in that moment there was. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
That was the Jew. Great. We got the Jewish
the official
question
Jew
in,
question.
And your red light is still on.
Yay!
So.
Good. Perfect. No,